From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, eventually he's going to learn how to say this is FSN, if it kills me. Welcome to the programme. Thanks, Simon, for the news. It's 3 minutes past five. Thursday it is, the 15th of October, 2020. Ah, good show, I think, lined up for you today.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now. My friend, and she is a friend of mine, Cherise Burchett, is very well known on social media as a safe medicine activist. She's a pro-safety. How do I say this? She's a vaccine safety advocate, that's what she is, and she's very well known for doing that. She's been on the programme before. I was on Twitter this morning and I saw that Cherise was trending big time in the UK, trending with the word selfish. And there was a picture of Cherise on an airplane coming back from Germany with other women, and they didn't have a mask on, and it was all kicking off. What's that all about? Well, we'll find out with Cherise Burchett. She joins the programme this hour. And a bit later on this hour, I'll be joined by Tracy Kavanagh. Now, Tracy runs Le Munch Cafe in Bournemouth. Le Munch has stayed open during the pandemic, refused to wear slave masks, as Tracy calls them, refuses to take people's details, refusing to take people's details, and they've refused to ask their customers to socially distance. So we'll talk to Tracy Kavanagh about that in the programme as well today. Busy old programme today. It is Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Good, as always, to have your company. And you know how to reach me, so do it the usual way. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good, man, is what it is. Tourette's sufferers have made great strides in recent years, haven't they? Tourette's is a thing that I still find funny. Now, maybe if I was afflicted with Tourette's, I wouldn't find it funny at all. And I'm not a cruel man. I've never been cruel. Never in my life. I don't find other people's misfortune funny, but there are certain things I can't help laughing at. Tourette's. Tourette's used to be people randomly blurting out stuff like shit, arse, fuck, and this whistle they do, this kind of whistle I can't do. I can't whistle. Yeah, I can't whistle. You see, I can't whistle. I used to be able to whistle until I had a bridge put in my upper row of teeth. Now I can't whistle. But you know the Tourette's. Now it's not shit, arse, feck and whistling at people randomly. Now it's save lives, protect the NHS, hands, face, base. That's all you hear. You turn on the TV, it's all you hear. Save lives, protect the NHS, hands, face, space. It's an improvement, I suppose, on the feck, arse, shit type stuff. The future Mrs. Allen, I've mentioned her a few times. Love the woman. Very, very smart. No common sense. Hugely intelligent. Very intelligent. No common sense. No filter. Nothing between brain and mouth. Nothing between brain and mouth to double check what you're going to say. Makes me laugh all the time. She's the woman who said to the question, which film contains the line, we're going to need a bigger boat? She said Titanic. As I mentioned, we're going to need a bigger boat to smash through the iceberg. She's the woman who said she used to love Starsky and Lacey on the telly. And last night, and this is true, you couldn't make this stuff up. I've got a little book and I'm going to write a book called Froggy-isms. She's from France, you see. It'll be called Froggy-isms. Last night she says, randomly, it's always out of the blue because she reads, doesn't do TV and silly TV shows, likes to read, very French, likes to listen to Chopin on the stereo, loves all that. Oh, she's a rent-a-cliché, right, as a French person, loves it. Out of the blue last night she says, I really enjoyed listening to the hypnotherapist, Richie, on the show. Jonathan Royle, I said. Yeah, she said. He does stage shows too. He hypnotises people. He does, says I. I wonder, says Caroline, if he does hypnotherapy over Skype.
What kind of fuckery are you?
If he does hypnotherapy over Skype, yeah. What would happen then, I said to her, if you got disconnected or the internet went down and you're running around the living room acting like a feckin' chicken and the Skype goes down, what would you do? All right, says she, I get your point. And went back to her book. I've been watching The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix. Are you watching that? As a fan of horror and scary films, I've had scarier bowel movements, to be honest, than The Haunting of Bly Manor. Not great. It's the big thing at the moment on Netflix. Let's get to the news. Transgender women will still be allowed to play women's rugby at all non-international levels of the game in England for the foreseeable future, according to multiple news sources this morning. The Rugby Football Union decided more evidence was needed before implementing any ban. Trans women can play with real women at non-international level rugby. Now, the RFU, their position is at odds with World Rugby, because World Rugby ruled last week that trans women could not play international women's rugby after a big review. The review said that the risk of significant injury was too great. Here's Dr. Nicola Williams, Director of Fair Play for Women. She's not happy the trans women can now play rugby in the UK in amateur competitions. She tells Talk Radio's Ian Collins.
It has, and you know, I think England Rugby have thrown away a golden opportunity here to make the women's game safe and fair. They were handed it on a plate by World Rugby. They did the most amazing, comprehensive and open and transparent review of the science. I was there at the meeting, so was England Rugby. They saw the science, they saw the issues, and you know, World Rugby decided that it would be unsafe and unfair for their professional women to play against people who were born male. And that's common sense. You know, we all know why that is unfair and unsafe. And the idea that England Rugby won't extend those same protections to amateur players at club level is not right. And, you know, I really would call on England Rugby to think carefully about what they're doing here, because it's not fair on most of the women that play rugby.
So the trans women can play domestic rugby with the real women, but not international rugby. So for a little bit of balance before the programme, today I caught up with Amanda, who identifies as a woman and is delighted that the RFU says that he can pretend to be a woman and play with the ladies. Well, nice to hear from you, Amanda. Your reaction to the news?
Well, I'm delighted, Richie, delighted. Can't wait to scrum down with the girls, get stuck into the ruck, yeah.
Now, World Rugby, though, Amanda, World Rugby hasn't followed suit and won't let you play with the ladies internationally. Are you disappointed about that?
Yeah. Some of those international teams, ladies. Four. Yeah. Well, hopefully Mermaid can keep trolling them and they'll come round.
Now, as for those who say there's a safety issue there, Amanda, that trans women could injure the real women.
Let me stop you there, Richie. I might be 6'10", weigh 22 stone, have size 15 boots and, well, a cock you could hang 5 beer mugs on, but I'm a lady.
Quite. Well, if you say so, I might join you, Amanda.
Listen, Rich, just say that you're a woman, get the number 8 shirt on your back and become one of the best lady players in the world.
And I'm joining the Bradford Bells next week. So today it's all been about Tier 3, Tier 2, Tier 1 levels of COVID alert. London upgraded to Tier 2 or downgraded, depending on your understanding of the situation. The government wants Greater Manchester to be put into Tier 3 restrictions. Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester, is a moron. He's been saying that Greater Manchester will fight this. They ultimately want a full national lockdown for 2 to 3 weeks. It's madness and it is getting worse. A gym in Liverpool stayed open. It's made the news. I tweeted about it earlier on. Armed police turned up, incredibly. Yeah, that's been making the news today as well. Armed police turned up. It's getting scary, all mad. And journalists should be taking it apart. But no, journalists are not taking it apart. Listen to Angela Epstein, Manchester-based journalist, and nothing to Jeffrey Epstein, I don't believe. She's always on Sky. Listen to this journalist talk about, well, these new measures and the difference between Boris Johnson in the UK, well, in England, and Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland?
It's almost sort of, you know, competitive in how people are sort of, you know, ruffing up their feathers and showing how their grandiose way that they can lead the country. I'm not interested in seeing how Nicola Sturgeon is earning points as a politician, or how well the Welsh are behaving, or how well Westminster behaves. I want this virus to go away. Like most people, I am heart sick of living under restrictions. I'm sick of the deaths. It's tragic, the number of people that are affected by it. We need to have some kind of cohesive policy that is not distracted by how one leader has got more kind of grandeur, is doing better in the polls than another. We need to know the baseline rules to make it go away. And that's why I come back to my fundamental point. It's not about geography. It's about recalibrating the way people behave. And my Northern Irish colleague, I absolutely agree.
Recalibrating the way people behave.
I absolutely agree with him that you have this yo-yo effect. You lock down, you suppress the virus, you flatten the sombrero, and then as soon as you taste liberty, it comes back again. So we're going to have to live in this yo-yo state for a long time. So we need to work together and not be befuddled and misguided and distracted by the politicking that goes with it, and just look at the ways as a nation we can come together and work with it. I just get completely sick and tired, and I think so many people do, about the way that we've made it sort of almost a parochial thing, when, as I said, it's a pandemic. It's not a parochial demic, it's a pandemic.
How could you ever describe yourself as a journalist in company ever again? Did you hear that?
And my Northern Irish colleague, I absolutely agree with him that you have this yo-yo effect. You lock down, you suppress the virus, you flatten the sombrero, and then as soon as you taste liberty, it comes back again. So we're going to have to live in this yo-yo state for a long time.
As soon as you taste liberty, it comes back again. We're going to have to live in this yo-yo state for a long time. That's a journalist called Angela Epstein. Amazing stuff that, isn't it? Yeah. Remember when yo-yos came out? Could you do the tricks with them? Could you walk the dog? Remember yo-yos back in the 80s, the early 80s? I could make a yo-yo do feck all, really. I could barely get it to go up and down, the yo-yos. I haven't seen one in a long time. Long COVID is everywhere today. It has dominated, as well as whether Manchester will be put into Tier 3 restrictions and London going into Tier 2. It has dominated the news agenda. Long COVID. Long COVID. The idea that you don't just get over coronavirus, whatever it is, that you might end up with serious illnesses and problems with other internal organs for a long time to come. Long COVID. Jingle, please.
Ben Hancock's Long COVID.
Long COVID. Brought to you by Wes Craven and Matt Hancock. So long COVID, I was sceptical about this on Twitter today, and I had a bit of a pile on. There were people piling on from all over the world, calling me a bit of an idiot. But sure, I am a bit of an idiot. Some of them were a bit more rude than that. Of course I'm a bit of an idiot. They're adding new symptoms every day to the list of long COVID ailments. Funny stuff this, lads. Well, who better than the intrepid K Ginger Ninja Burley?
Well, can coronavirus affect your hearing? A study led by...
Can it affect your hearing? Go on, Kay, start again. I'll try not to laugh this time. Can it affect your hearing?
Well, can coronavirus affect your hearing? A study led by the University of Manchester found 13% of people hospitalised with COVID-19 reported a loss of hearing or tinnitus after contracting the virus. Let's talk about it in more detail. Joining us is Professor Kevin Munro. Hello to you, Professor. Good to see you. So talk us through the findings of this report.
Right, 13% of a very small number of people claimed that after they got over COVID, they had some hearing loss or tinnitus. Big news this.
Well, Kate, at the beginning of the year, because most of us thought that the virus was affecting simply the respiratory system, but we've learned, as your previous interviewer said, that it affects all sorts of organs in the body. We started to hear anecdotal reports of hearing loss, which of course can have a devastating effect on quality of life early in the year. There were mention of it in newspapers. So with my colleagues in the Manchester Biomedical Research Centre, we published a couple of studies over the summer. The first was looking at what is the evidence that people are reporting hearing loss after they have COVID-19. And to our surprise, despite the fact that we'd only known about the virus for a few months, we came across a number of studies linking coronavirus with hearing loss. Numbers were not very high, but the fact that there were any studies published at all was interesting. Quality not great, and that's what motivated us to carry out our own study where we interviewed 121 adults who had been hospitalised because of the severity of their COVID. These were adults in the Manchester area. And when they were followed up routinely as part of their normal care, 8 weeks after they'd been discharged from hospital, they were asked many questions about their health, and it included questions about hearing. And
questions about their hearing. 121 people who had been seriously ill, I'm guessing they must have been over 70, over 75, right? You hold that thought.
Questions about hearing. And again, to our surprise, 13% of them said something had changed with their hearing or they had noises in their ears. And
that was Jesus. 13% of OAPs who were hospitalised with COVID expressed some loss of hearing or tinnitus in their ears. Well, I'm just falling over here in admiration of the in-depth nature of this study.
It was roughly half of the individuals said their hearing had changed and the other half said they had noises in their ears. So, you know, the take-home message is there's growing evidence that the virus may damage your ear.
It might do. I could be full of shite. But then, when haven't I been full of shite? I fully expect one of these mornings to come back from my walking the doggies and to switch on to Sky News, and you'll have the music, you'll have the jingle, and Kay Burley will say, good morning, there's mounting evidence that ingrowing toenails are a sign of long COVID. That's how crazy it's getting, really, isn't it? I believe long COVID is a scam, of course, because COVID as a pandemic has fallen apart. It's been ridiculed. It holds no water. It's disastrous. Everybody knows that only a tiny, 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 tiny percentage of people actually get it, and that an even tinier percentage of it are seriously ill. It's nonsense. So you want to keep people living in limbo, yo-yoing up and down like that fuckwit Angela Epstein said earlier on. How do you do that? Well, you introduce the notion of a deadly long COVID, that it can affect your kidneys and your heart and your lungs and your chest and your hearing and your penis and your vagina and God knows what else. And that buys them the time, you see, to carry on with this bullshit until they present a vaccine that they want everybody to take. Charisse Burchett joins the programme very, very shortly. Tracy Kavanagh will be live. She runs Le Munch Cafe in Bournemouth. She'll be on with me today as well. It's Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show. And there's nothing like it in the world. At least I don't think so anyway. Not very modest of me, is it? But that's how I feel. This is Steppenwolf and Born to Be Wild. Be wild! Be wild, don't be mild, don't fall for the COVID bullshit. Back in 2 minutes. Right, as we're under time pressure today, let's just ixnay the music. My friend Charisse Burchett made me laugh this morning. I was on Twitter and I saw that she was trending again. And I thought, is she arguing now with the pro-vaccination Twitter sphere? Is she getting stuck into them about the possible harms of vaccines? And she wasn't. There was a photograph of Charisse and some of her friends on a plane without any masks. They were coming back from Germany. They'd been to a protest there. And the term selfish was trending. And there was a massive big pile-on on my pal, who is a safe medicine advocate. Always pleasure to talk to Charisse Burchett. Charisse, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Hi, Richie.
Made me laugh this morning.
I'm currently getting a public stoning. That's what I call it now, Twitter stoning.
You've got... one of the things I've noticed about you over the years, it's kind of water off a duck's back these days. What were you doing in Germany? I know it's got something to do with Dr. Heiko Schoening, who was arrested at Hyde Park, of course, wrongfully arrested. And you were over there. Tell us what you were doing there in the first place.
Well, I was literally next to Dr. Schoening when he got arrested. And it inspired me to, you know, we had a debriefing kind of session, because that day at the protest, it was very violent. We had a lot of police violence towards innocent people, and we kind of went for a sort of debrief meal just to, you know, just to assess the day and what had happened and everything we'd been through and how crazy it was. And then we're all inspired to go to Germany and go to the next protest where Dr. Schoening would be present. And then we've just kind of hatched that idea, and it all came to fruition with a few of us going. And then a couple more joined in to go and film. So we had a couple of people filming for the Highwire. We had a person filming for Highwire with us, and a person filming for Children's Health Defence too.
Great. And that would be that would be Del Bigtree's people, wouldn't it? That's a very interesting program.
Yeah, Del Bigtree and Robert Kennedy's the Children's Health Defence.
Fantastic. And you went to Berlin. I understand that these protests in Germany have been enormous.
Well, that's what we thought. The last one was, I think, about 1.5 million people. So that's what we were geared up for. And then in the week, I kind of had a message from someone, and it's a, Therese, I think it's going to be a socially distanced protest, and they'll be wearing masks, and you know, it's not going to be like the last one. And I just thought, well, we've booked it now, we're going, and we'll see what happens when we get there. So it was. I think that was done with influence from, you know, authorities too.
Yeah.
And you know, we got there obviously with our signs, and my friend had a 10-foot giant nasal swab which she'd concocted, which is her kind of thing.
Yeah.
She's very passionate about the PCR test.
Yeah.
And we turned up, and it was a very Bridget Jones moment, and it was quite hilarious. We turned up and there were no signs, and the organizers said, what do you know, this isn't supposed to be like this. So we literally had that Bridget Jones moment of being dressed up in the bunny costume at the protest. But we made the most of it, because in the end, having those things that drew people to us, and we had lots of love from the German people, and we met lots and lots of people, you know, speaking to us, wanting to talk to us, and they were just so thrilled we'd come over. And I also took a great film of some doctors who were there speaking out, and it was a beautiful film of these doctors. And then we took a long march to the actual speeches.
Where was this happening in Berlin now? Where was it? Was it at the Brandenburg Gate? Where was it?
There was a statue, and then we kind of walked through the Brandenburg Gate, and then we walked down to the Alexanderplatz. So it was quite a long way. It was done in a few stages. It wasn't all together. So people had demasked and then went off, and then we kind of went down and joined the 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening speeches.
Brilliant.
So yeah,
because I know you were very interested when the very first protest took place in Berlin. As far as I understand it, again, the estimate is somewhere around 1 million people took to the streets in Berlin. Now that's hardly insignificant. That is massive. That's like the Iraq war protest, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I mean, that's not conspiracy theories. That's not a bunch of far-right-wing conspiracy theories. These are people like myself, like other mothers. We're just mothers, as you said to me before. We're just mothers who want our children to have a future. And as it's going right now, I feel like they're not going to have one if we leave things to carry on as they are. And that's why we're out there. You know, it was just as mums. And my friend had with me also has a vaccine injured child too. So, you know, we're out there as mothers wanting a future for our children. We don't want them to be under this kind of, you know, constant, you know, anxiety of, you know, you have to wear a face mask, you have to do this, you might have a cold and then not being able to go into school. It's just getting too much for people now, I think. And and that's, you know, and literally my whole life is just right, when I don't have the children, my weekend is protesting now.
And the idea that you need to go to a protest to hear qualified doctors, medical practitioners, scientists, to hear them speak is, again, it's kind of inverted to me. The reason, of course, you've got to see these people at these protests is because our news programs in our countries are ignoring these men and women, and they've earned the right to have their say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, they've been ignoring the doctors that speak the truth for decades. We know that. I can learn all of that from listening to them, just focusing and listening to a lecture that they've done or reading their scientific papers. I'm at the protest to meet other people, to get my voice heard, to try and wake up other people on the streets to say, we need to stop this now because this is getting out of hand. What is happening to our world, we're seeing it go slip through our fingers practically, and no one is doing anything about it. And I'm just seeing people following the rules, and that's all that they can do. And if they see people not following the rules, it actually quite upsets them. And now I'm seeing levels of kind of people being quite mean and nasty. You know, at the start of this lockdown, it's like, oh, everyone's sort of happy and smiling. But I think the masks have, within a few weeks, they've dehumanized society to a great extent. And my concern is, what level of dehumanization are we going to see in a few months' time? You know.
Yeah, one of the analogies I draw is if you imagine a bunch of people wrongfully imprisoned by a militia. So you might be in you might be in a jungle somewhere, you might be in the Far East, you might be in Nazi Germany, and you're locked up with a bunch of other people in the wrong. There's no reason for you to be locked up. And what's happening now reminds me of, so you might have one or two people who are agitating and, you know, screaming bloody murder about the fact that they're locked up and they won't comply. And rather than join them, the other prisoners are telling them to shut up, you know, shut up, you're making it worse for the rest of us. And that's what's happening across social media. Rather than accept that people have a right not to wear these masks, that they have a right to quality of life, rather than turn on the governments, people are turning on people that are asking questions that are very pertinent questions. And I find it insane. Tell me about, I mean, what's fascinating is when you spend this time in Germany, in Berlin, you go to come home then. And that's when, of course, we end up getting this photograph. When you and your co-protesters, your friends, go to come back to the UK, go to the airport, tell us what happened then. This is amazing.
Well, there was a few of us, we split up. I mean, there wasn't 10 of us, but there were other protesters, obviously on the same flight, or other people on that flight who had exemptions or who had been to the protest. It was quite a busy flight. And then, when you go into the terminal, there were policemen patrolling up and down, just literally patrolling you. And we said, well, we have exemptions. You know, the three of us that were together had exemptions. And they wouldn't accept them. And we said, well, we are, you know. And I kind of sort of flitted off and thought, right, I'm going to not do joined in with these people, and kind of, you know, undarted off. And we all went our separate ways for a bit. And I was literally like hiding in the toilet and things. So I thought, well, they're not going to accept this. They're actually quite, you know, they wouldn't just accept the British exemptions. Like, no. And then we kind of got through security, and my friend was actually being quite, I think she was being quite bullied, and they were like, where's your mask? And I think they singled her out to search her. And then I went through, and then there's sort of like, there was another couple of guys, and then there was another couple, and then there was sort of two of us. And then it just sort of, then we thought, actually, we'll sit with these people because it's sort of safety numbers, and we all had exemptions. And then, you know, it just seemed like the security was coming around. We kept getting asked by security and asked again. And then the police came with the security, and we've got it on film. There's about three policemen.
To do what now? What they came to insist that you wore masks on the plane. They were just talking.
I mean, they were talking to the chat. So we were all kind of together. So I was there thinking, wow, I'm so glad I'm sat with these men, because they were just so determined, and they held their ground. They were really polite. They said, no, I don't have to wear. I have an exemption. And they just, you know, they just were pressurizing us. Because Germany is very different. And also the people in Germany, surprisingly to me, were very policing of masks. They'd come up to you you know, I even had a couple in the lift thing. I'm not getting the lift with you because you're not wearing a mask.
Citizens, we're talking civilians here would be, they were policing it themselves, the civilians.
Wow. More than in England. So we just literally held firm, and while these, you know, I mean, I let the gents do the talking because they were just holding firm and they were taking the sort of major flak from the police and this airport security. And then I think we might have been holding up something in the plane or holding something up, and then
holding the flight up. You were holding the flight up by the sounds of it.
Possibly.
Yeah,
I don't know, because I lost track of time at that point. I didn't even know what the time was, and you know, it was just because it just felt so tense and it felt so threatening. You know, you've got three or four policemen around you and you think, And then somebody from the airline came out and kind of smoothed it all over, checked our exemptions and said, that's fine, you know. And then we went to go on the plane and then we were called aside again. And someone else said, well, you have to be very careful now going on this flight because somebody's just been attacked on the plane for not wearing a mask. And I thought that was so suspicious. But it turned out that had happened to another person I'd happened to be speaking to earlier in the terminal.
Attacked by who? Attacked by a fellow passenger or attacked by a police officer?
Attacked by a fellow passenger for not wearing a mask. But I wanted to speak to her to find out what happened, but I haven't managed to catch up with her yet. I'm sure I will, because we've all kind of friended each other on Facebook, because we weren't all together then as a group, but we thought, actually, this is getting quite serious. So we stuck together.
This is what we've been reduced to now.
That picture I posted today, you know, if I posted that a year ago, it'd just be like, oh, look at those boring women off bragging about their holiday or something. But today it's received the public. Hey, I've been called every name under the sun. I mean, I've got these horrible messages in my Twitter inbox, which would just sicken anybody. I can smell you, US and GIMP.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean? Rat lickers. I mean, rat lickers seems to be another word.
What the hell is that?
You should
be denied NHS treatment. I see that. Just to remind our listeners, so once they got on the plane then, obviously shaken, because that's not nice, Charisse and her party took a photograph, which has gone viral today, of them on the plane without the masks, explaining briefly what happened, that they'd been accosted by the police, but they stood their ground and they didn't wear the masks and they're on the plane anyway. And then the abuse then is horrendous. People wishing death on you, people wishing cancer on your child, all this sort of nonsense.
I haven't actually seen them all because it's gone so far. It's just thousands and thousands and thousands of hate messages that I can't physically keep up with them. And it's been like over 24 hours now. It's sort of like, actually, there comes a point where you think, you know, just
ignore them.
You can't reply to everyone and go, oh, I'm sorry, you feel like that. Or
I hate the idea.
Don't be rude.
Yeah, I hate the idea of somebody coming up to you in a public building saying, put a mask on. I find it extraordinary. I mean, it happened to me one time in a record shop months ago and it nearly turned violent. It didn't, thank God, but it nearly did, because I won't take that from anybody telling me what to do.
Before the mask, it was a hand sanitizer. I was like, no, I don't want this hand sanitizer. It's harmful. It's endocrine disrupting. It's cancer causing. No, thank you. And then you'd have people. I had a woman physically chase me around a shop and spray me with whatever was in this bottle.
In Germany.
And I had to run away from her. No, in England.
Jesus Christ.
And I'm just thinking, people have lost their common sense. They've lost their mind. I don't know if they become mentally ill by all this media, constant media.
Yeah.
Coverage and of a virus that has a 99% recovery rate. People have lost their marbles.
Do you know what's going to happen, Charisse?
Okay, to
scream at people.
Treat a human like this.
I'll tell you what I think is going to happen.
Get in the lift. It's unclean. You're unclean. Yeah. I've had my best friend actually come around and say, not come around, but I haven't seen her before lockdown. No, Charisse. Well, my husband, you know, because you've gone so many protests, he thinks I might give you some. You might give me something, so I can't meet up with you. And I'm just like, do you see where this is going? Do you see what is happening? You've got people saying you're unclean, and you're unclean.
This is the
danger. What's going to happen next to the people like us who are saying no, thank you?
Well, I'll tell you what I think is going to happen. For what it's worth. Amazing your friend saying that. My husband is worried because you've been to so many protests. I'll tell you where I think this is going. It is going to become unbearable for people to the point where to the point where those who are right now in favour of these restrictions, they're going to start getting more and more depressed and anxious and fed up. And rather than turn their glare collectively on the government, they're going to start turning it on people like us. They're going to blame us
rather than look up to see who's really to blame. Yeah. They're going to start like lashing out who they can, who's a weaker target, who they can actually, you know, hurt. But I mean, this is just crazy. And it's this is, you know, in Germany, and I went into a brilliant museum, and I really wanted to go in there. And I put a mask around my chin to go in there. I confess, I let myself down. But it was had lots of the Nazi memorabilia and the Jewish memorabilia. And it was just literally like going through what we're going to go through, because we're separating people out and saying, you're unclean, you're not part of this, you know. And that's what it's going to be. And these real followers are going to be the Nazis, and we're going to be, you know, I'm not comparing us. But history, you know, you have to look at history so it doesn't happen again. And that's why when I'm seeing like people not getting in the lift with me, my friend doesn't want to meet up with me because I'm, you know, I might just don't know. But we know how to look after our health. You know, we run, we sleep, we eat well, we do this. You know how to look after our health and supplement it. And common sense is going out of the window with health. Now,
well, we know that.
Wear a mask, put hand sanitizer on, and stay inside. The government knows the amount of studies that exist on isolation and loneliness and the effects on human health. There are masses of them. And what did they do? What was the first thing they did? Isolate everyone and make them lonely. And that effects on human health. A few months of that effect. Then the masks, the hand sanitizers, then the mental. This is pure evil by design. And they're chipping away at everybody. And I've just been on the phone to my friend Dean, who you know, he's been a really good friend of mine throughout lockdown. And he's like, I'm going to lose it. And he's not like that. And I'm seeing that a lot now of people just like having enough or being very depressed or, you know, so then we're going to go, then they want to put us in another lockdown.
We've not been able to go anywhere for the best part of 6 months. Now, some people will listen to this and they will claim or say that the presenter is exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating. I am a social animal. I like to be out. I like to have a meal out, not in fancy restaurants, but I like the lunchtime specials. I like to go to the cinema. I like to go to the theatre. I cannot do any of that. It's been impossible for months. I've basically, like everybody else, been confined to my home, apart from walking the dogs and going for a run. And that has taken a toll on me. It's taken a toll on my missus. Mm. And it's taking a toll on my friends. It really is. And I'm not surprised to hear about Dean. Yeah. When you mentioned Dean there.
And this rule of six as well. Yeah. Dean's, you know, brilliant film with Dean and his mother, who is just wonderful. And she's like, I want to get busy living. 82-year-olds want to go down the pub too and see their friends. You know, they have a life. You know, just because you get to 80, we have a 99% recovery rate with this virus. What is going on? Why have people lost their ability to go, this is absolute, you know. I haven't seen anyone with coronavirus. I don't know anyone.
No, me neither.
I keep asking people, has anyone died? I don't know anyone. I'm looking on the front. I don't think anyone's actually died where I live.
I know thousands of people through the program.
I'm very sorry people have died, and I'm not saying the virus doesn't exist.
Yeah,
but we're not in a pandemic, because if we were in a pandemic, I would be seeing it, and I'm not seeing it. Yeah? And it has to just, you know, we have to do something. We have to try and get people to wake up and out of this, you know, just like sleepwalking.
It's very Machiavellian, really, the furlough scheme. Get people to comply, because initially they got quite a long holiday where they were being paid. Well, and that was really smart, that, because it suckered people in.
Because, Richie, how many paedophiles do we have in the government, you know, previously, you know? They're skilled groomers. That's how they groom you. They're grooming people. Have this. It's going to be really good. And then they'll take something from you. That's how it works. It's a form of grooming. And I know that's, you know, but then, have some money, go and eat out. But you messed that up.
Yeah, that's right.
You shouldn't have eaten out.
Yeah. It's gaslighting in the extreme. Yeah, it's gaslighting.
It's grooming.
Grooming, gaslighting. Absolutely right. Yeah. Go here, don't go there. Go over there. Do not go over there under any circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do this, wear this, don't wear that. Of course people are falling apart with it. It's absolutely
mental. The masks are just a prop in a play. This is a coronavirus play. The masks since the end of July, August, September, you know, okay, people have been doing it. They've just kept the whole charade going, the whole stage play, because we wouldn't have even felt it as much as if we didn't have the mask.
Yeah.
Or this, wear the mask. You're not wearing a mask. Oh, Lord, no, we've got to, everyone's dying. No, because if we hadn't have been wearing the mask, everyone would still be fine. It'd still be 99% death rate. But it's just kept the whole charade going, more visual everywhere. People are driving in their cars and old ladies. You see old ladies struggling into town at the best of times and they've got masks on, and I want to stop my car and say, please take that off, please don't wear that, because you're going to make yourself sick.
It'll make you sick, yeah.
So that's everywhere I'm looking, I'm seeing just heartbreak. Or, you know, even my daughter didn't want to come shopping with me on her birthday because she said, Mum, well, you know, you just won't wear a mask and people will get upset with you. And I said, I don't have to wear one, but the children are finding it, you know, my children want to wear a mask so they don't get into trouble. You know, and it's, I mean, I am, you know, where's this going to go? And I'm just hoping that, you know, like being in Germany, and they are bringing together a group of World Doctors Alliances, and the protests going on and the people keep speaking up. I mean, even if I take a Twitter stoning and people listen to this radio show and think, actually, was that, I mean, is it acceptable to even write that to somebody repeatedly, you know?
I wonder where a lot of that comes from. I really do. I tell you what, Charisse, I'm going to give out your, ironically, I'm going to give your Twitter link.
I think. Come and send me some love, please. Send me some love.
Yeah, it's at charb at charb charb revolution, all one word. At charb revolution, all one word. Look, thanks for dropping in short notice to tell us that today. I'll be asking you back in the near future for a longer chat about this and about the vaccines and all the rest of it, because I know you you do a lot of research into that. I'm going to be going to the south coast in a moment to a cafe owner who has refused to comply with all this. We're going to have a chat with her. But if there is something you wanted to say before I move on.
Sorry?
No, if there was something else you wanted to get in quickly before we part company today.
No, I haven't really
prepared
for today, so... You've done all right. I'm not like a media person, but thank you so much for listening.
Anytime.
And just lots of love to everyone out there listening. Just keep going. Just look after yourself, look after each other, really look after your health, you know, just because this is what they want. They want to grind you down. This is what they want. So if you need me, I'm on Twitter. You can message me. I'll phone you up. I'll cheer you up. I'll do, you know, just keep each other going, because this is what they want. They want us to off each other, us to off ourselves, and then they want us to off each other. And that's, you know, so we have to keep strong and keep trying, keep going, all right? Okay, lots of love.
You too, Charisse. Great to have you on today. Charisse Burchett, who's an activist and a mother of a child who was injured by a vaccine. And I have a lot of time for Charisse. She was in Berlin on behalf of the doctor who was arrested in Hyde Park. I'm sure you've heard now, Dr. Heiko Schoening is his name, and telling us there about trying to come back and the hassle in the airport and the hassle in the departure lounge and the hassle in that thing that I can't think what it's called now, that thing that you walk down. It's not a gangway. You know that thing they attach to the plane, that tunnel? All this hassle about wearing masks, and they didn't. And they put a picture on Twitter. It wasn't particularly triumphalist. It wasn't, really. And it was the mother of all pylons on Twitter today. And the abuse was, well, fairly horrific. But she wasn't whinging too much about it. I like that. Because sticks and stones may break your bones, but names, well, never hurt you, will they? I've had it myself a few times, memorably. I had it last year for days on end. People from all over the world, because I said something as benign as, I'm sick to death of hearing about the Holocaust, which I was. And I am, at the time. And all the ad hominem attacks then about, oh, he's denying. No, I'm not denying anything. Don't even start with that, or I will sue the underpants off you. No, not at all. I don't deny anything. I'm just tired of turning on Netflix and seeing 15 to 20 films about it. And people didn't like that. So they tried to make life very difficult for me for a week. I just laughed. That's what I do. It is 11 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen radio show live from Salford. Now, let's get my next guest on the show. And I've been trying to reach this woman, can you believe it, since September the 22nd. That is the 22nd of September, yes. Because I saw a tweet of hers, and the tweet was very, very interesting indeed. I think it was in response to something that I had put out. I'd put out a newspaper article or something, and I saw a tweet from Tracy. And Tracy said, "Richie, it's bollocks. I run a cafe and we have stayed open during the pandemic, refused to wear our slave masks, refused to take people's details, refused to socially distance and refused to comply with the council's demands. We do, however, offer good food, big hugs and a free red pill." Let's welcome to the programme the woman behind Le Munch in Bournemouth. And if I was anywhere near Bournemouth, I'd be popping in regularly for a sandwich and a cup of tea. Let's welcome Tracy Kavanagh. Tracy, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm really well, Richie. Thank you for having me on. I'm not actually in Bournemouth at the moment. I'm in London. I travel between London and Bournemouth, where the business is. But today I'm in London. I'll be going down there tomorrow.
Oh, you're
but
in the capital.
Yes, you and everyone listening are more than welcome to come in for a cup of tea and a chat and another red pill, should you require.
Another
one.
Red pill. I love this. So how did you get away with this from the get-go, when local authorities were threatening people who ran businesses that if they didn't comply, you might find yourself getting a visit and getting into trouble? How did you and the staff at Le Munch get away with it?
Well, we had several visits initially from the licensing officers, who don't normally go to cafes, but as all the pubs and bars were closed down, they had nothing better to do. And even when initially what we decided to do was work as a takeaway, go on Deliveroo and, you know, continue in business to avoid closing down. We then opened up the cafe as a shop so people could still come in. People were still coming in for collections of food, and obviously we stayed delivering. But with the licensing people, the Nazis, as I call them, from the local council, they would come by every few days and ask us to bring our chairs in, you know, start telling us what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing. So I would just argue my point and then bring the chairs in when they went, put the chairs back out, because there's no point continuing arguing. Sometimes people just don't want to wake up and, you know, they're getting paid to do a job, and unfortunately they're doing that job to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're one of the lucky ones. On the road that I'm on, already several businesses have closed down. As I say, we're one of the lucky ones. We're still going now, and we're going to keep going throughout whatever happens. And yeah, I just feel really sorry for all those around that have lost their businesses, people losing their homes. But more than that, I mean, a lot of the local people, we're in a working class area. A lot of the local people, you know, they don't come in for their food. They come in for a chat. You're part of the community. They come in for that, you know, to feel wanted and just, you know, it's part of their life. But yeah, unfortunately,
as we would say in Ireland, they come in to see what the crack is. They come in to see what's going
exactly
on locally. So tell me
exactly this.
How stressful was it then when they were coming around, you know, giving you orders and directives and stuff like that? You knew what was going on elsewhere. Yeah. You must have been worried about it.
Yeah, but there's only so much you can put into worry. You've just got to get on with it, haven't you? I mean, I don't believe any of the hype. I don't believe in COVID-19. We all know the PCR test is like a fake. It's not real, and 98% of the people tested is false positives, and, you know, the conspiracy just goes on and on. But I didn't spend too much time stressing about it. I was too busy trying to reform the business so that we could still continue and still keep people in work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you weren't worried about them closing you down at all? You didn't think, well, they might do that? You just kind of soldiered on?
It did cross my mind, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a certain amount of worry involved, but I didn't let the worry overtake me. I just focused on what I needed to be doing at the time. And business actually went up as a result of that.
I was just going
enough.
To ask. I was just going to ask because you might imagine that some people might give the cafe a wide berth because they might think, "Oh, it's not safe in there." But that didn't. But that didn't happen because
no,
people
the opposite
came in.
Happened.
Wow.
Because people came in and realised that we wasn't buying into it, and the people that were also not buying into it were coming in as well. And then the ones that were concerned, well, I just strategically laid out some Vernon Coleman leaflets all over the place and strategically laid out my David Icke books in the bookcase and just directed them to that. And
what sort
I think
of response
people...
did you get? Sorry to interrupt you there now. On the David Icke and the Vernon Coleman, Tracy, what sort of response did you get?
I'm really surprised because all I ever hear is, oh, people need to wake up, the sheeple.
Yeah.
But I found that a lot of people down there in particular are quite awake. There's several local businesses around me that are totally awake and staying open and continuing. And, yeah, I didn't find it a problem at all. I think what you put out there, you know, comes back and that's what we're putting out there and that's what we're getting in the cafe. And it's really nice. I'm meeting new people all the time. I had a lady come in last weekend. She said, oh, I came in to see you in the week. Well, I'm not there at the beginning of the week because I'm in London. She said, you wasn't here, but me and my husband have come back to see you. We just want to talk. And we sat down for 2 hours and this lady, totally awake, spoke about everything, every conspiracy under the sun, about the chemtrails, about the eugenics movement, about vaccinations, you know, everything. We sat there for 2 hours. And then funnily enough, the next morning, Sunday morning, Sundays can be really busy in the cafe for us, a gentleman came in, he'd never been in before. And he wasn't a doctor, but he was a herbalist. And I had a fantastic conversation with him as well. Myself, I'm a homeopath and a holistic therapist as well. And the type of people I meet there, I never ceases to amaze me. People are waking up much more now than I've ever seen before. It's amazing.
So this particular event, this particular time might be a catalyst. Yeah. It might be a catalyst because
definitely.
It's so obvious this, isn't it? I mean, I can try and be objective if I want. I can play the devil's advocate, but there's no point. We know, we've seen the Edinburgh report that came out of Edinburgh University. This is a nonsense, this. It's a nonsense, whatever it is, and it's apparent even to some of my friends of old. I've got friends of old who have been in touch with me of late, who said to me, "We thought you were crazy doing these radio shows years ago, but now we can't deny this. We can't deny that this is a major power grab, and it's having such a devastating impact on our lives. No denying it."
Yeah, I've got people in my life that used to call me a conspiracy theorist for years and now they're all coming to me saying, it was true, you was right, it was true. Well, the actual pandemic, Richie, it's not about a virus. What I believe, it's about my personal belief, the real pandemic is about the child traffickers, the paedophiles and the satanic ritualists, you know, run by the elites. And that includes royalty and virtually all those in Hollywood, all high-ranking MPs. Are also highly involved in this. And this is what they don't want you knowing. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware of all these different subjects anyway. So it's a little bit like preaching to the preach. But it's just one big smokescreen. It's a lie. And when I speak to people, I don't say, oh, you must do this, you must do that. I have open, honest conversations and I say, research it yourself, you know. Go and look at this book. Go and look at these statistics. I never force my opinion down. And if people get upset or they get a bit angry, I say, well, let's agree to disagree. Let's not fall out, you know, and plant them with a little seed. Because no matter how much you try and wake up people, they'll only wake up when they're ready to wake up. And if you just plant that seed, I think that that's much more helpful than trying to push information down people.
That's a lovely thought, that, because people... your friends, your family, your neighbours, your colleagues in business, these are real people and they're more important than any argument about what's really going on. You're right.
Absolutely, yeah.
You're right, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Let me just remind our listeners, Tracy Kavanagh is on the line. She's in London, Tracy, but Tracy runs Le Munch Cafe in Bournemouth, which is very popular. I'm sure it was always popular. It's very popular these days. And since this began, Tracy has stayed open, has refused... to wear masks. The staff don't wear masks. They didn't take people's details. Wonderful. Thank God for that. they didn't ask people to socially distance and they wouldn't comply with the local authorities' demands. And that's a terrific thing, really. And I've said this time and time again, Tracy, and I mean this, if only 3/4 of the businesses in Manchester, for example, looked at what you did and said, we're going to do the same, we're all going to do it together, surely they can't come around and close every one of our businesses. I just wish they do that, you know, anyway.
No, you're absolutely right, Richie. I see a post on Facebook yesterday. Now, I'm not really active on social media. I retweet and repost. I've probably got 5 followers on Twitter, you know, and I repost things on Facebook, but I don't spend a lot of time. I'm more like a ground foot soldier, you know, in the way that I operate. And I see a post about this poor guy trying to open his gym. The police surrounded him. They find, and straight away I was on there. Local people, get down there, support him, stop them. There's more of us than there is of you. Now, I just felt really, really sad for that young man being given a £10,000 fine. Where was his community? Where were all the people standing there, not letting the police in? Everyone is just standing back, letting all these, you know, things happen, this tyranny, just sitting there watching it going, oh, no, you have to do this, you have to do that. No, just stand up, join hands like we did at one of the marches a few weeks back. And they can't get through you. Yes, they can bash you around the head with their truncheons or whatever they choose to do. But if you are non-compliant, non-aggressive, and you can vocalise yourself well, articulate what you're saying, even the police will stop and listen to you. So at one of the marches, the police were listening. And at the end of the day, they've got families, they're human beings, they've got children.
Yeah.
They don't want that for their children, but they're the ones enforcing it. So I think we have to all make a stand in whatever way we can. You know, I do it through my business and through other means, and everybody can make a difference.
That's a really important point you made there about the police particularly. It must be occurring to some policemen and women that their own children and grandchildren are going to be putting up with the brunt of this. You reminded me of something there when you talked about how people might have turned up at the gym and stood in solidarity. Quite a few years ago, I was in London, and you mentioned David. David was living with my partner, my oft-mentioned partner, and myself. And I asked him, had he seen the Ken Loach film, Looking for Eric? And he said, I haven't, he said. And being a big football guy, I said, look, we'll watch it. You'll enjoy it. And I'm going to give a spoiler here now. So if anybody hasn't seen this, I'm going to give you a spoiler. But ultimately, this man is going through a very difficult time in his life, and he imagines that he's conversing with the footballer Eric Cantona. And one of the things that's going on in the guy's life is gangsters are basically making his life and his son's life a misery. But in the end, anyway, lots of this guy's friends come along with him, and they all put Eric Cantona masks on their faces. Lots and lots and lots of them, dozens of them. And they enter the gangster's house and they humiliate him and his family, and they video it and they run him out of town effectively. And I remember at the time, the tears were spilling down David Icke's face. And I said, what's up with you, you big softy? I said to him. And he said, Richie, that's how it ends. That's how it ends. When people decide we will stand in solidarity with our friends and neighbours, even if we don't speak to them very often, and we will go to them in their time of need. And he was moved by it. And I remember thinking, he's right. When they all got together and put the Eric Cantona masks on and ran this gangster out of town, said, you can't kill all of us. There must have been 100 guys there. They didn't beat him up. They didn't beat his wife up, and they got rid of him. And he said, that's how it ends. That's how it ends, because there are far more, as you said there a minute ago, Tracy, far more of us than there are of them. How do you reach that point now, though, in the social media age, when everybody is obsessed with the self, with themselves, with their own place in the scheme of things, and their own opinions and their own consumerism? How do we even get there? You know, I don't know.
Well, we just get there by being loving towards one another and, you know, protecting the ones we love and speaking to everyone with compassion and understanding and empathy, because, you know, the other side of this coin is the amount of mental illness that is now, we're now just getting a glimpse of. You know, everybody has suffered. My sister runs a care home, one of the biggest care homes in the country, actually. And for the last 6 months, she has been under tremendous amount of stress, having to conform to what the government are telling her to conform to, not letting the relatives visit their loved ones, people not being able to see their sons and daughters. And they're just withering away. They're depressed. It's taken its toll on my sister. She's now seriously ill. I mean, her adrenals are all shot because she's been living under so much stress over the last 6 months. But what do you do? She doesn't want to leave because, you know, she cares for these people. She finds it so difficult enforcing that. And the amount of stress she's under alone, it's just awful, just awful.
That can't be healthy for the care home residents if they're not being taken out and brought out on outings, taken to places. I said this on the show the other night. What happened to wrapping people up in warm, comfortable clothes and earmuffs and gloves and taking them out for the day? That's hugely therapeutic, surely, Tracy.
Yeah, and obviously the most sensible thing to do, you know, when you separate people and you isolate them, then it does affect them mentally, emotionally, and any type of stress brings on illness and other conditions. And unfortunately, these people die before their time because they're dying of loneliness. And illness is brought on by not being able to. Imagine that, Richie, not being able to hug your daughter or your son or your loved one for over 6 months, not to have any human contact whatsoever. I mean, I just can't wait for the day when this government is taken to court and they are all put in prison and we can start, you know, again, we can start this society again. Of course, it's going to be different. This isn't the new normal. This is the change that we're going through right now. The new normal is going to be much better than we've ever known because we have to fight this or we're all going to end up just slaves.
Why are you so optimistic, Tracy? Why? I love that optimism. I really do. It's given me goosebumps really listening to you. You believe that it's all going to end well in the end. Why are you so optimistic?
Because it can't end any other way, because if it ends any other way, that's the end of the human race. With the vaccine that they're proposing now, is a completely different vaccine that we've ever seen before. It's called an RNA and it actually changes your DNA. And inside that vaccine is going to be like nanotechnology. And this nanotechnology is like little aerials which can be picked up just coincidentally by 5G, and you can be controlled, you can be actually told, well, triggered into doing things that you wouldn't ordinarily do because that is now part of your DNA. And once they change the DNA of everybody in the world, we are no longer human, we're transhuman. And this is part of the global agenda as well. And once more people wake up, I think people are waking up at a rapid rate. But once more people, enough people are awake, all we have to do, Richie, is say no. I mean, I sent you an interview when I was on LBC several years ago. And at that time, a few people were awake, but not as many as are now. I used to get ostracized at the school gates by parents that wouldn't talk to me because I didn't vaccinate my children. And yet I used to go into the schools and give talks about the dangers of vaccinations, never forcing anyone to listen to me, but to make their own opinion, to research it themselves. But this new vaccine, it's just going to be the end of the human race. And once people realize that, and they've certainly had a long time to be thinking about it now, I think everybody's going to stand up hand in hand and they're just going to say no. And then we can start putting in place a new society, a new democracy, one like we've never seen before. But in ancient history, I mean, I'm not sure if it's Hinduism, but they believe that we're heading towards a golden age. Every 2,500 years, we go through a different period. And at the moment, we're in what is known as the Kali Yuga age. And this is the most devastating time. And what happens now will actually determine how our future is. And the more people that wake up and realize we have the power to make this earth so much better, one person can make a difference. One person planting the seed in another person and then going on to do the same. Everybody can make a difference to this world, whether it's like me, you're running a cafe and you just talk to people, they then go away and research something for themselves. Everybody can make a difference. It can't go any other way, Richie. I truly believe that we need to look out for each other. We need to pray, we need to meditate, and we need to bring about a much, much more healthy vibration to the earth so that, yeah, we can move forward. And I understand as well that Brian Rose is running for mayor, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I was sent something about that by somebody. Yeah, I'm on the fence there now.
Me too. I am as well, Richard.
Yeah, I'm not sure about his motivation.
I don't hold out too much hope.
Yeah.
But at least the guy has got a brain and he knows what he's talking about. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, given the job that he's planning to go into. And at what point will he have to sell his soul? So the way I see it, I think the whole of society is going to break down, whether we like it or not. And I don't want to put fear into people. I want them to see that as a good thing, because from the ashes rises the phoenix. Lovely. And it's then that we will take back the power. We will imprison those that have abused and systematically tortured children. And, you know, we're going to take that power back and we are going to win in the end. I truly believe that. And everybody else should be a lot more positive as well.
I do believe that
what you put out there, what you focus on, you bring back. And it's the same with fear. If you focus on fear, then the level of vibration that you're running at is going to attract back that fear. Whereas if you're coming from a place of love and you're vibrating at a much higher energy level, then that's going to come back to you as well. Now, if just a handful of people can change the course of the world just by sitting in prayer or meditation together and sending loving vibrations to different people, it really does work, Richie. And I think that's where we need to, you know, this is not just a war on us. This is like a spiritual war. You've probably heard that before. This is a spiritual war, and we will not be defeated. They can't win.
Most of my audience are nodding along, I think, when you say, so I'm sure they are when you say spiritual war. Tracy, let's leave it there for today. Just for today, I'd like to have you back on again in the near future, if you wouldn't mind coming back on. I'd love to have you on again.
I'd love to come back on.
Yeah, I just want to remind our listeners, Tracy Kavanagh is on the line. She runs Le Munch in Bournemouth. If I was anywhere near there, I'd be popping in. If you are travelling through Bournemouth or you live there, pop around to a cafe that isn't telling you to wear masks, that isn't asking you to socially distance, it doesn't want your details, and basically you'll get a big hug and a good chat and a marvellous cup of tea or a cup of coffee. All power to you, Tracy. Not at all. And all the best to your, and a red pill, of course, and all the best to your sister. God love her. I hope she'll be okay. It can't be easy dealing with that. Yeah.
And all the best to you and all your listeners as well. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure to have you, Tracy. Thanks very much. The lovely Tracy Kavanagh, who was in London today. She runs Le Munch, which is a well-known cafe in Bournemouth. And I saw a tweet from Tracy back in September about how she had refused to comply. And she was following me, believe it or not, but she wasn't used to Twitter. So I said, come on the programme. I only got a reply this morning. There you go. Sure, all's well that ends well, you know. Now, would you believe it? The author, the martial arts expert, the genius, the college professor, John Klychek, is going to be with me in about 10 minutes' time. John is in New York, I believe. I could be wrong. I hope I'm right. He was on the programme not too long ago, about 3 or 4 months ago, back in June it was, I think, to talk about the corporatisation of education and how that fit in to the technocratic future world they want to prepare for us. He was very, very popular when he was on the programme, John Klychek. So he'll be back with me in around about 7 or 8 minutes' time. It's a pretty packed old show today, so it is. It's pretty packed. I've got Johnny Cash lined up, be Jesus. Oh, yeah. The Richie Allen Radio Show, 12 and a half minutes past the hour. Thursday.
Ring of fire. The ring of fire. The ring.
Yeah, I'm loving the programme today myself. Thank you for the nice comments on Twitter. Cherise Burchett and Tracy Kavanagh bringing a bit of positivity to the programme today. Loving that. John Klycek will join me in a few minutes' time. Live, I got to get this right. John is he's in New York, or he's somewhere in Central Time. I should know this. John was brilliant. He was on the programme back on June 3rd, and one of the more, I think, the more popular interviews this year. We talked about his book about the corporatisation of education. Great guy. And it's been what? July, August, September. I'm doing that thing where I count on my fingers. 4 months since he's been on, and it's about time that he came back. Right, we'll have headlines. Before we go anywhere else, we'll have headlines. We've got to have bloody headlines. See what's been going on. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, I suppose. Over to FSN then for headlines on your Richie Allen Show. The time is exactly 16 and a half minutes past six. FSN.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. London is to see tighter COVID-19 restrictions imposed this weekend as its alert level is raised from medium to high. Democratic vice presidential candidate Senator Kamala Harris is cancelling all travel after one of her top aides tested positive for COVID-19. And six senior Russian officials have been targeted with sanctions by the EU following the nerve agent attack on opposition activist Alexei Navalny.
Thank you, Simon. This is your Richie Allen Radio Show, live Monday to Thursday at 5 o'clock UK time, 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings. It is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Upwards of 120,000 listeners live every day, 2.5 million listeners taking it every month on Podomatic, Spotify and iTunes. There's nothing like it, eh? Nothing like it at all.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, you must never forget this.
The views and opinions expressed on The Richie Allen Show are those of the guests and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect the position of the host or other contributors.
Yes, that's for the guilt by association, arseholes. You know who you are. I can't go on that show with you, Richie. Why is that? Well, because some bloke was on 3 years ago and he said some terrible things, did he? I didn't say them, though. You can come on with me. Let's welcome John Klycek back to the radio show as we approach 19 minutes past the hour. Why do you keep... Ah, Richie, give over. Give over now with the bad production. Why do you keep telling us the time? I do, because you might have somewhere to go. You see, and when I say it's 19 and a half minutes past the hour, you go, damn, and then you run for the front door. I'm thrilled that my next guest agreed to come back, and I mean that sincerely. When I spoke with him back in June, that interview went viral, a hugely popular programme, because he laid out basically the themes contained in his book. His book is School World Order, The Technocratic Globalization of Corporatized Education. Corporations taking over schools with the help of corrupt politicians. The rise of virtual online schools where children will eventually be educated by artificial intelligence. It was brilliant in June. It spooked a lot of people as well because he's so calm and reasonable and measured. That's because he's a college professor, an author and a martial arts instructor. His website is schoolworldorder.info. Let's welcome back to the programme, John Klycek. John, thanks for coming back on. How are you?
I'm good, Richie. Thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here. It's kind of related to your, I think you were talking to some gym owners. I imagine you're trying to reopen. I should mention, I apologize to your audience. I've got the worst sciatic pain I've ever had in my life from all this sitting at home and not being able to get to a gym. So if I'm at all, it sounds like I'm far away. I'm literally crouched on the floor right now because I can't stand all the way up or sit on these old chairs. I got to get a nice office chair. But it's great to be back, and I got all my notes ready, so we'll have a good talk.
We'll have a great talk, and you can take it in any direction you want. I'm sorry to hear you've got the sciatica pain, and that's important to talk about that for a moment. When you are at your fittest, you are unbelievably fit because you're a martial arts expert. How difficult is it for people, I mean, people who use gyms? You mentioned there what's happened here in the Northwest is the police, armed police, turned up at a gym run by a man in Liverpool a couple of days ago. Gyms are supposed to close now. They've locked Liverpool down into this tier 3 system where pubs, restaurants have to close, gyms, casinos, cinemas must close. And this young man said, no, I'm keeping my gym open. It's very important for people's well-being. And the armed police turned up. John, we spoke on June 3rd. Did you think that between June 3rd and now that things might have improved? Or did you know that things were going to get worse?
Well, I mean, I assume that if there wasn't any effective pushback, that they're going to keep going with this agenda and you know, probably keep us locked down for as long as they can until the full social credit system is rolled in. I was hopeful that maybe, you know, there would be a little more pushback right now, but, you know, maybe it needs to get a little bit darker before people will wake up a little bit more. Hopefully.
So you still hold out some hope that as it gets increasingly worse, that people will come together and say, right, what are we going to do?
I have to at least hope for that. And you know, I have to stay focused on that as much as I can, you know, because I don't do what I do just to, you know, say, look at the cool book I wrote and stuff like that. It's, you know, obviously not the funnest material that I could. There's more less depressing stuff I could be writing about or researching. So, you know, I do this in the hopes that, you know, we can turn things around. And, you know, I do believe that, you know, evil has to feed off of good. And sometimes, you know, people need to get kind of late in the game. They need to go into the deep waters to really realize what the dangers are. But I, you know, I mean, that's then maybe I'm a little naive, I guess, but I guess it keeps me going. I guess it keeps me trying to push back as much as I can.
No, I don't think you're naive at all. You are echoing the sentiments of my first two guests today, both of whom believe that there will be a brighter future, however difficult things might get. John Klychek is our guest, college professor, author of the book School World Order, The Technocratic Globalization of Corporatized Education. Even if you didn't see a pandemic or scamdemic or whatever we call it, even if you didn't see that coming, and you might have done, you have known for a considerable length of time, John, that it's a technocratic future they are laying out for all of us, not just for children. Do you want to explain in as simplistic terms as you can how that future will shape up? What will it be like? How will it be? How will it feel to live in that future if they get their way?
Well, first thing is you're going to have sciatic pain from sitting at your chair at your house all day.
Number one, right.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, I mean, while they're trying to, I mean, they want to, quote unquote, save all these lives for the sake of public health. I mean, these types of issues, although I'm not dying, I mean, you know, it's the worst pain I've ever been in my life. I sound happy right now, but if I were to move the wrong way, I'd be lit up. So most of it is, you know, the world we're talking about is one where you're basically, your home is turned into both a prison cell and also a government / corporate training facility. If you're allowed to go back outside, you know, if you have your immunity passport and you have all the proper social score high enough to access your transportation, healthcare, housing, education, jobs, etc., you know, you'll largely still be, you'll be tracked by everything you do. So that goes for, you're in your house, whether you're working or learning. So you're going to be tracked on basically what you're posting online, what you're doing at your job. Some of the, I think we talked about the in the learning, we talked about last time, the cognitive behavioral stuff, the socio-emotional learning, and the precision education. So basically, we're talking about data mining, your thinking algorithms, your feeling algorithms, and also your DNA for the sake of not just training you on your learning modules in your house, but also on your workforce modules. So some of these modules, maybe some people are using these, but the companies are tracking how productive you are on your at-home module. And so they're looking at things like keystrokes per second, clicks on the mouse, and things like that. So basically, if you're allowed to go outside, you'll be able to maybe, you know, go to the grocery store with your mask on and get some groceries or stuff. But most of your life is going to be inside your house, and that's going to be basically converted into a corporate government training facility.
And it's an artificial intelligence program that is data mining you to better utilize you. Am I getting that right? We talked about this last time. It'll be watching your every movement. It'll be drawing on your emotional responses to better determine, this is the artificial intelligence program now, to determine how to better use the human being. Is that right?
Yes. And also, you know, it's going to be looking at your, your basically your mental health, yeah. Right? And so we're seeing a lot of, also police reforms, and part of that is going to be, I think you probably, well, this is how they put it here in the U.S. In the U.K., it might be similar, but they want to replace police officers with mental health counselors. And so that means that basically they feel like maybe that'll be safer than sending an armed police officer to your house or something like that.
That's amazing.
And so that, sorry, go ahead.
That's amazing to me. Replacing police officers with mental health counselors. Now, where have you come across this?
So this is all over the media, but you can see it in the police, the Justice and Police Reform Act, I believe is what it's called. So it's the federal bill that's in the mix for reforming police here. And so it would, so one of them would be to increase, so if you have a domestic call, you'll have a mental health counselor come and, you know, talk to somebody, and maybe you need a treatment or something like that. But then there's work in the mix to combine that with all the stuff we just talked about, and that is the data mining stuff. So we have some bills over here that were pitched for something called red flag laws. And so if you're pitching, I guess, what they consider extremist content, if you're posting that stuff online, the idea for the red flag laws is that the social media companies can flag you, and then maybe a police officer comes, or if they get the reform bill in, it would be a mental health counselor. Then the mental health counselor will come and maybe have a little chat with you. Maybe you might need some sort of a treatment or
intervention.
A counselor.
An intervention, John. You might need an intervention. Yeah. This is astonishing to me because I visited a local laundrette today, and I was speaking to a lady there, and she put me in touch with a woman. And this is all true now. I would never, ever say anything on this program that is not true. I was hoping the woman would be on the radio show today. She lives in Salford, in the northwest of the UK. She received a visit from the police, from the Manchester Police, the Greater Manchester Police, the other day, because she was on Facebook. This is true now. And on Facebook, she was very, I suppose, loudly saying that she wouldn't wear masks anywhere, that she'd popped in and out of the shops locally, the small shops, and she didn't wear them. The masks were tyrannical and she didn't like them. Now, somebody must have dobbed her in. Somebody must have dropped a dime, as it were, on this woman, because Greater Manchester Police turned up and asked to have a word with her, and I understand asked her would she accept a caution. Now, this is astonishing to me, but it's happening, and you've seen these red flag ideas mooted, these potential laws whereby you could be on Facebook saying, well, I don't think we should have this COVID vaccine because it could do enormous damage to you. That might lead to you getting a visit from a mental health counsellor. Imagine that.
Yeah, they have a nice little term for it over here. They call them anti-maskers, right? So, you know, to combine it with anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
You know, and it's obviously a pejorative to, you know, demonize you as somebody. You know, you're this evil person that doesn't care about public health and, you know, you want to spread your diseases everywhere. So, no, that absolutely would be one of the things that down the pipe, you know, when they pitch the red flag laws, they're really talking about mass shootings and stuff like that, that we've heard all the hype about over the years as far as how to fix that stuff. But, you know, as soon as they get into that, you know, communitarian style of policing and using public health as a mode of policing, then yes, and, you know, if you're an anti-masker or an anti-vaxxer, to use their terms, you'll get a knock on the door. And, you know, it might also refer to if you have problems with or if they think the language you use on social media or elsewhere is not equitable enough. That's the fancy new word now for this.
What does that mean, John? What does not equitable enough mean? This fascinates me.
Well, this has to do with some of the, we'll just call it the social justice rhetoric and the racial justice rhetoric that's being used to drive the policing reforms into a technocratic policing system. And, you know, the root here, you know, it's similar to the word equal. Right. But you see that it's not equal. Right. It cuts off the root and adds the suffix on there. And what that does is, if we're talking about something that's equal, that means you have like a law like the Bill of Rights or Magna Carta or something, some transcendent law, some principle that applies to everybody equally, regardless of circumstance and condition. The idea of equity is to suggest that if you really want to balance everything out, you can't have a universal principle that's applied equally to everybody. Instead, what you have to do is, you know, some people have more of an advantage, some have less of an advantage. So what you have to do is to make it equitable. Some people get more and some people get less. And if you think about it, really, though, this is the basis of any ancient caste system. The only difference is this will be a digital caste system regulated by all the algorithms that we just talked about. And I might mention also that, you know, while everybody in the SJW movement who is burning down statues and wanting to change the names of everything, IBM has recently announced that they are going to, their press release says that they're ending their facial recognition program for policing. But obviously, if you read the article, like most articles with these salacious headlines or these misleading headlines, you'll see that they're not getting rid of it. They're going to remove the limited uses that they had until the policing reform bills are passed. And then through those bills, what they're going to do is reform the facial recognition. So in other words, right, the policing reform is all about technocracy, using social media, data mining, algorithms, facial recognition to track not just what you post online, but what you do in real time. And the reason I brought up IBM in this context, because the title of the article refers to they want policing to be more equitable, their artificial intelligence system is named Watson. It's named after Thomas J. Watson, who is the man who did business with Hitler and sent the IBM systems and the punch card systems over there to process the concentration camp data that they were gathering through their eugenic experiments in the concentration camps. But nobody's saying, hey, rename Watson because it's the most racist thing. And
Imagine it is
the most racist thing ever. You would think.
This is disgusting. This.
And I they call for. And by the way, I'm not.
Go ahead. Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say that I want it to stay named Watson so that I can always tell people this so that they know exactly, right, what this thing is about. If they were to burn that down or tear that down or change that name, you know, I wouldn't be able to tell people the sinister history of Watson quite so, or in their artificial intelligence quite so succinctly.
I've never been a virtue signaler. When somebody says that, it usually means they're going to virtue signal, but I'm not going to do that. I never have been. Knowing my history as I do and being a history graduate, I know the part that IBM played in Nazi Germany, and I wouldn't, and I never have had an IBM machine anywhere near me. And I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, the things that people don't know, what an astonishing thing. It's called Watson. And I've been asked to put this to you. Let me remind our listeners, this is hugely important stuff, folks. This is next level stuff. that we need to be talking about. John is a college professor. He's an academic. He's a very smart guy. Martial arts instructor. He's an author. Check out schoolworldorder.info. Please read School World Order, the technocratic globalization of corporatized education. With all of this, John, with all of this that you've discussed there, facial recognition, all of these data mining systems that can actually measure our emotions, surely, surely, if this goes unchecked, we could see in the next 5 to 10 years, maybe sooner, maybe later, we could see a paradigm where you might get a knock on the door to be told you're being arrested for something that you might do or they believe you were about to do in short order. I'm talking about Minority Report. Is that where this is going ultimately?
Oh, absolutely. That, you know, we're talking about predictive analytics,
yeah.
You know, and so we're talking about, you know, what they call pre-crime, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, all, you know, Philip K. Dick, all those great science fiction writers, you know, most of them were either, you know, scientists themselves or very close to the scientific elite themselves, you know. And so just as one example, you know, Aldous Huxley, you know, that guy was the brother of Julian Huxley, president of the British Eugenics Society, the first director general of UNESCO, which also pushes calls for global eugenics. So, you know, all these science fiction novels that you see, H.G. Wells was a student of Aldous Huxley's grandfather, and, you know, all his science fiction is being just, he was a scientist himself, right? It's based on the things that they wanted to do. So they just drew a little fictional representation of what they thought the future might be like, sort of extrapolating forward. So no, that's not really fiction. Science fiction is rarely based on total fantasy. It usually is grounded in not just the technology that exists, but the plans for that technology in particular.
We've had a tweet. Well, we've had many tweets since you came on. Charlie Stevenson is an IT freelancer. He says, Richie, I often get despondent about the lack of coverage of the technical aspects of this COVID hoax. John is brilliant. He knows his onions. Do you believe that, John? I mean, I do. I'm prepared to accept that there is an illness of some description. I think I might have had it. I won't get into that again. I think there is an illness. I think it's made people unwell. Very bad for very senior men and women, and very bad for people who are already unwell. But ultimately, it's been overblown, and it's basically tyranny. The lockdown is a tyranny. Is this whole scamdemic, is it about this agenda you've just been describing? Is this a cover for this agenda?
I think I agree with you. I would say that, you know, I'm not saying it's a total hoax or anything like that, but look, just look at the numbers. Look at this. I don't know what your public health department is over there. We have the CDC. You might even have a CDC branch over there. The CDC is actually global. They have branches in multiple countries. But if you look at our CDC numbers, and they're on my Twitter somewhere in there, probably down a ways, you can see very clearly on their own reporting that they count probable causes of COVID-19 death. And then if you look at the chart, what you see is there's a very small portion that can be attributed definitively to only COVID-19. And that's about 6% last time I checked. That's what I posted. That was, like I said, might have been a month or two ago. Then you have several other categories that is where the bulk of the other deaths come from. And those have to do with comorbidities. So that means you had another ailment that triggered it or that put you over the edge. So maybe you had diabetes, a kidney issue, a liver issue, heart disease, some other respiratory issue. Maybe you had the flu. Maybe you had pneumonia. There's a category for each of these. It's a very complex chart. And then you also see that, and I kid you not, Richie, it's on my Twitter, that one of the comorbidities in the chart is self-injury. Now, you know, it's let's just play devil's advocate, just be reasonable, you know, for the sake of, you know, let's give them a doubt for this or benefit of the doubt for a second, right? Okay, let's say the tests aren't that great, which they aren't. You've got your antigen, your antibody, your PCR, and there's been several cases where the PCR test for famous people, I think it was a senator out here, he was positive, he was negative, he was positive, or he was negative, he was positive, he was negative, whatever it was.
It changed
three times. Okay, let's say that the tests aren't that accurate, so it's hard to tell right? Did you get COVID? Did you get a flu? Okay, maybe you want to count some of those or put them in some category where maybe it was COVID. But self-injury, I'm sorry, clearly should not be a category of comorbidity. So if this thing was the global pandemic that was as dangerous, so dangerous that we need to shut down the entire planet and end our way of life, they shouldn't have to fudge any numbers, and they certainly shouldn't have to add self-injury to the list. And I should add one more thing. If we really want to get an accurate assessment of these numbers, what we're going to need to do at some point is look at, compare the excess deaths of this year versus last year, or this flu season versus last. You can't just look at the number of deaths when they have 45 different categories that are obfuscated and you don't have any clear determination of which categories are actually the causes of death. But we can see how many extra people died from COVID would be the excess deaths. In other words, right, we should have in America, we should have an extra 200,000 dead people than we had last year, right? It shouldn't be. In other words, It's not that much, if it's anything less, we can clearly attribute most of those deaths to either flu or some other ailment.
You're absolutely right. John Klychek is our guest. John can be found at schoolworldorder.info. He's on Twitter as well. I'll send John a tweet so you can see his Twitter handle. It is Professor Taoist. So at Professor Taoist, please follow him. You're listening to a very, very smart guy here. I've been asked to ask you, so next year then, we can't access any public building unless our phone, which will connect with the device at the other end at the public building, unless our phone declares us to be healthy and to be vaccinated. One of the things which has proved very controversial, especially in the mainstream media, is any talk about Bill Gates. And I've had people on this programme who have said that there is peer-reviewed studies and there are websites which show clearly that nanotechnology to be used in vaccines, to be administered, to be injected into people through vaccines, this is real, and the prototype of this stuff is already out there and it's in the public domain. Is it? Is there a plan to use vaccination to introduce nanobots into our bloodstream to perform various functions inside our bodies? Is there any truth to that, do you think?
You know, I haven't looked at any of those patents or any of those documents, so I don't want to speak on something that I'm not familiar with. But I do know that I did confirm that Gates has worked on this quantum dot tattoo in coordination with the COVID vaccine or with these vaccines. And the quantum dot tattoo is basically, if I understand it correctly, it's some sort of I think the term is luciferase is the term they use for this dye that goes into these implantables. And this thing reads your immunity level. Yeah. So definitely, if not through the vaccine itself, I can confirm that he has developed and funded some other technologies that would basically do similar things in combination with the vaccine. I should also mention that the other thing I can confirm is that not about nanobots, but these new vaccines they're making, most of them, if not all of them, are they're RNA vaccines. Yeah. They're not your old school vaccines that's just, you know, a dead or weakened form of the virus, and then you go ahead and put it in your body, and then the thing gets, you know, you acquire immunity by killing this weak thing, and it learns how to fight off the disease. This is something that somehow alters your RNA, which is a component of your DNA, and basically reprograms your own biology to fight off this COVID or anything else that they might engineer it for. I should mention that the only time that they've ever done RNA vaccine tests and actually done the proof test, that is when they have an animal studies, by the way, which they're trying to skip most of these with the Warp Speed project over here. But when they test a vaccine, they're supposed to do they don't do placebo studies. That would be any other scientific experiment. But there's a certain point when you do the proof test, and that is, okay, first you test to see, will you inject it in the animal? Does it get sick? Okay, the animal doesn't get sick. Now, so it doesn't kill the animal. Let's see if it actually made them immune. So then they'll expose that animal to whatever virus, microbe, or pathogen it's trying to ward off. And I think they did it. It was rhesus monkeys, I believe. And they all had an extreme autoimmune response. So they were worse off when they encountered the virus than they would have been before they were vaccinated. So, I can't speak to the nanobots, but all of that is everything but nanobots, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all bad stuff.
No, you're right. What I've been looking it up while you've been talking, because it has come up on the program, but I haven't read into it myself. But everything you just said is true. It's Massachusetts Institute of Technology, so MIT, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, created an ink. The ink can be embedded in the skin alongside the vaccine itself, and the ink can be read using a smartphone camera app and filter. And it basically helps with creating accurate vaccine records. It basically means that you can be read by people as to whether you're safe or not. There was an interesting thing. The London Marathon took place recently. And before the marathon itself, the athletes, the elite athletes, the ones expected to do well, they were kept in a so-called bubble in London. And they wore a necklace around their necks. I don't know if you came across this. And the necklace is called a bump. And the bump reads everybody else's necklace. So you have a bump, I have a bump. And if I get anywhere near you, or if I get within 2 meters of you, it sends off an alarm. It goes red and it tells me to back away from you. And they're talking about introducing these to companies the length and breadth of the UK in order to help us all get back to the workplace more safely. Technology, 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 technology. And again, you've been on top of this for a long time, John, but it's startling to many people, and it's more than startling, it's terrifying to more people. Wear a tattoo that says you're healthy. Have a device around your neck that keeps you more than 2 meters away from people. What that proves to me is that this COVID thing is only the beginning. They're not just going to say in 6 months' time, oh, it's okay, you can get back to normal. They're creating a way of life out of COVID with technology, implantable, wearable, that we're going to have to get used to for the rest of our lives. But again, I say to you, this is not news to you, is it?
No, and you know what's funny? Not funny, but I recently visited my dear friend Charlotte Thompson Iserby. She wrote The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. She worked for the Department of Education under Ronald Reagan. She leaked something called Project BEST, Better Education Skills Through Technology. It was a federal government program to corporatize the education system through public-private partnerships, and then to change academics to workforce training, which would be administered through psychological conditioning methods. In other words, the Skinner box computer, using stimulus response psychology through computers to condition children for workforce training as opposed to higher thinking and academics. Well, I visited her, and she kept all these files from all these years, and somebody by the name of Lawrence P. Grayson gave her a file right after she leaked Project BEST. And, you know, she said, go through all this stuff because you seem to have a better idea about what's going on with this technology stuff for me. So I went through this file, and this man who was the liaison with UNESCO has a file that demonstrates that Project BEST was basically just the American branch or the American version of the technocratic system at the schooling level, which we are discussing. And so I've got something, you'll be interested in this in the UK. I've got all these files here. I need to write this up. I meant to put some of the take photocopies or take pictures and put them on my Twitter. I'll do that afterwards. This back thing is just driving me up the wall.
Yeah.
So I'm slow. But so at the Open University, okay, this is in 1982. Open University currently provides, it's the largest provider of online learning in the UK through something called Future Learn.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, and the Open University was trying to pitch something called the Cyclops system in 1982. And I'm going to put these pictures on my Twitter, but it's got diagrams. It was basically dial up. They were calling it interactive video. It's dial up. Video conferencing, just like all the Zoom, all the stuff that we're doing right now that I have to do as a teacher. They had this stuff ready in the 80s. And then what he gave her was a stack of UNESCO files, and I'll put those up on my Twitter as well, where they're basically pushing the exact same system all at the exact same time. I've got one from Madrid, Spain. I've got one from Poland. I've got one from Austria. I've got one from, I think it's V-R-I-J-E University. That's Dutch. It's Netherlands. I don't know how to pronounce that. I'm sorry, my Dutch brothers and sisters. Another one from the Netherlands, Malaysia, Denmark. I mean, I could just go on and on through this. I mean, so every country, most of these are European countries, they had the same project set up, and all they were discussing was how can – basically the problem was the hardware was too clunky. It was too heavy. They wanted to convert to microprocessors. But he also has files in here from law journals to talk about how the lawyers were going to change things from an industrial economy to an information technology economy. And then he's got a bunch of these academic journals like Computers and Education Worldwide, Technological Horizons in Education. And it shows that if you look in the ads and you look what they're pitching, it shows all the companies designing courseware and hardware to facilitate this project. So if you look at all these files together, what you see is that Project BEST was just one arm of this octopus creature that comes out of UNESCO to create this technocratic system, which will eventually be the transhumanist system. And as I discussed on your show last time, you know, UNESCO was set up by Julian Huxley, who was the president of the British Eugenics Society, but he's also the man that coined the term transhumanism, right? And so he basically just said that with eugenics, you know, to create the new man or the new creature, the Ubermensch or the Superman, it was all about genetics. But then they figured out, well, you know, it's nature, and it's not nature versus nurture, it's nature and nurture. So they combine the psychological conditioning with the genetics, and when you put those two together, what you have is neurotechnology, meaning, right, directly conditioning the biology through nervous system transmissions of direct contact algorithms through something maybe down the pipe like a neural link or a brain-computer interface. But so, no, this is not new. And looking at this file, it shows me that, you know, we can look at something like whether it was intentional or not. And I think it was, because you can look at three things. You can look at Event 201, which everybody in your show probably knows about. That was the simulation between Johns Hopkins University, the World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, where they ran a simulation of a coronavirus pandemic in November of last year.
That's right.
And if you watch that video, you'll see Michael Ryan, the head or is a head up. He's way up there at the World Health Organization. He's the guy who's saying we might need to take people out of their homes. He uses the term new normal in November of last year. So there's that document. Then there's that simulation. Then there's the Operation Lockdown, or rather lockstep document from the Rockefeller Foundation. I believe it's something like strategies for the future of technology, where it's basically a script for what they're doing right now. So, I mean, they've had this this whole scenario, masks, contact tracing, all of that is in lockstep. That's 2010 was that document. Okay, so you know, I would think that, you know, that they have at the very least exploited this situation to ram through this system that they've had basically sitting on a shelf for almost 40 years, and they just got tired of waiting for us to say plug it in.
You're absolutely right. And the guy who a few years ago, a guy called Harry Vox, did a video on YouTube about the Rockefeller stuff. And amazingly, Harry Vox was on to the Rockefeller Foundation's plan for a pandemic back in 2016, 2017. I had him on the radio show fairly recently. It's all there. We've got about 3 minutes left today. Obviously, we'll pick this up again before Christmas. We'll have more time. You might be relieved to end it today in 3 minutes because you're not well there with your sciatica. You've got that pain. I appreciate that as well. I appreciate you staying with me for so long, John, today. It begins and ends this with children's, in my opinion now. From now on in, we've got to pay a lot more attention to children and their relationship with technology, because as far as I can see, and this is going to sound like a big generalization, but children are addicted to it. What do we do about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, at the very least, you know, and adults too. And, you know, you can't abdicate your parental responsibility to this technology. So, I mean, you know, not only are students or children addicted to it, but, you know, we use it as the babysitter. I don't have kids myself, but I've seen many times people you know, the kid is, you know, maybe rambunctious in public, and they give him the device, and then the parent, and then the adult is on the device too, and everybody's kind of doing their own thing. So, you know, you're right, they are addictive. They're designed to be addictive. Facebook has admitted that, you know, social media is designed to be addictive, and we're not just talking about the way that the algorithms are set up. It's just even the page design. You know, it's oftentimes on a social media platform, you can't look at one post unless you pull up half of the next one. So there's your stimulus response. In order to get the full reward of the full stimulus, you have to be triggered by the next stimulus. So that's how if you are on social media a lot and you find yourself, let me just check a few, and you end up on it for an hour, that's because it's designed to play with the dopamine centers of the brain in that way. But you're absolutely right. Like, we have to find a way to maybe put this stuff aside. I mean, I would go as far as say that until people stop almost literally worshiping technology, maybe all that hope I had at the beginning might not. Maybe that will be naive, because we could talk about Bill Gates and the Rockefellers and Project Best and UNESCO and the Huxley. We talk about all these evil institutions and evil people and all their diabolical plans all day, all these elites and oligarchs. But until the regular average person is willing to do something simple, like, okay, that's enough technology, or, you know, just to say no and to just put something down and to take some responsibility for their own acquiescence in the process, I don't know that we'll be able to make any headway. And the other way to say that is that's the most important thing, because as soon as people start reconnecting with each other as human beings and put these devices down, they'll understand what's really important in life, and maybe they won't be as scared, to stand up and to do a protest where they don't burn anything down. And, you know, so that's the key.
John, come back again, won't you, real soon? Loved having you back today. I'm sorry you're in a bit of pain there. I hope you manage that and get over that pretty quickly. I want to remind our listeners, they can find John at Professor Taoist on Twitter. Schoolworldorder.info is the website. And School World Order, The Technocratic Globalization of Corporatized Education, is the book you really have to read. You've been listening to college professor, author, and martial arts instructor John Klejcik. John, thanks for gracing us with your presence today, my friend. I love having you on.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I'm sorry I fumbled a little bit at the beginning. That pain was getting to me. My brain was distracted. But you're awesome, Richie. I'll come back anytime you want me to.
You're a gent, mate. Look after yourself. And we'll talk again real soon. John Klejcik, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Thursday, October 15th. And that's about it for today's programme. Can I give a big shout out to Charisse Burchett for coming on, talking about that experience in Berlin. Top lady at Charb Revolution on Twitter, CHARB Revolution. And you also heard Tracy Kavanagh, who runs Le Munch Cafe in Bournemouth. Great lady. If you are passing through Bournemouth or live there, go and say hello to her. She has not complied with the COVID regulations from day one, and she's not doing too bad at all today. Fair play to her. That's pretty much it for me for this week. Packed old programme today. You and I will talk again on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock UK time, looking through the papers and all of that old jazz. It's called Sunday View. It's where we have a bit of a giggle and listen to Andrew Marr, Sophie Rage, and just play around a bit for an hour. In the meantime, if the weather permits itself, do get outdoors over the weekend and get away from your screens, your television, your tablet, your computer. Get away from it. I'm telling you, you've got to do that. Have a fantastic weekend. Take care of yourselves. Until Sunday, bye from me.